are friends with fantasy benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Maybe I'm just an eternal pessimist because I've watched such shitty baseball all year. There's no faith in anybody.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I'm not a doctor by any means, but do you think anything to do with his lack of quick recovery time is to do with the spleen that he doesn't have anymore?
I mean, I personally don't really know what a spleen does.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
The draft, man. I'm probably one of the few people that likes it, that pays hardcore attention to the Major League draft, so I'm excited for it.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 284 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst, friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Matt Thompson. Matt, how you doing?
Tired of watching some crap baseball. But other than that, I'm excited to talk to you. And different sounds for the listeners today.
Yeah, it's just you and me.
Yeah, and I can't believe we've been on 284 times. That seems...
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. we're getting close to the big 300, which really won't have a special show or anything, but yeah. it's still pretty amazing. And if I remember correctly, I think we've done, since the beginning of the year, I want to say like over half of those episodes since the beginning of this season, this year, 2017.
I think we did about 270 of them together.
It sure as hell felt like
in the preseason, so I believe that.
For those of you who are kind of newer to us, at the beginning of the preseason, Matt and I did prospect podcasts together, just him and I. We went through all 30 teams. You can actually go back and listen to all of those on our feed. They don't have episode numbers, so that 284 doesn't even include the 30 prospect pods that we did.
Yeah, well, that makes more sense then. Yeah, those are great though. I mean, not to go back and rehash what we did past, but those were fun to do. Yeah. They were a labor of love, is I guess a nice way to put it.
No, it was really informative for me too. I really enjoyed it. I think it helped me out a lot in my dynasty formats. Just for reference, I mean, our first episode of the year was on January 2nd with Lore Michaels of Masters Ball, and it was episode 176. So we've done over 100 episodes this year. What's that, 112 plus the 30, so 142 episodes this year. So hopefully you've enjoyed all of that, and hopefully we're not clogging up your podcast players too much. But we're just going to keep going. We're going to be going all season long and in through the off season, and let's jump right into kind of the list of players we have to discuss for tonight. Mike, gave me all these names of guys he wanted to discuss, and then of course he doesn't show up.
Well, Mike's schedule's been a little bit difficult. He's got a new work situation, so our prospect pod has kind of suffered because of that as well. So hopefully we'll get one of those out this week, and we apologize for all that.
don't go to bat for him.
Well, some of it, it's trying to coordinate three guys' schedule. I think all three of us started a relatively new job in this time period, so it's okay. It's been kind of a tough to get it in, but we'll get you some prospect goodness coming up here soon.
Hopefully. I missed the prospect pod for sure. But let's start with Robert Gsellman, who was on a lot of people's sleeper lists coming into the season, including, I think, both of ours. We were both pretty high on him. If you go back and listen to that prospect podcast, started off the year really, really rough. But in his last five starts dating back to May 17th, he has a sub-3 ERA. The strikeouts aren't anything to write home about, but they're decent enough. He's walking about 2.5 per nine. He stopped giving up so many home runs. Is this the kind of the turning point for Robert Gsellman this year?
I hope so. I guess there's rumors now the Mets going to a six-man rotation, so he's going to be guaranteed a spot then in that. They kind of got some guys coming back, and it's the Mets, so any plans they make is going to be obviously not what's going to end up happening. But the thing with Gsellman that was a big worry going into the preseason, which we did touch on, maybe we didn't harp on it enough, but his fastball command was kind of the one thing he needed to work on. So hopefully if he gets a prolonged stretch here and gets a routine, he can do that. Because, I mean, coming from 15 to 16, I mean, we saw improved velocity from him in a big way. He came up to New York and took advantage of. He learned that Dan Worthen slider that the Mets are famous for, and he kind of ran with it, and it turned into his go-to off-speed pitch. And we had big things planned for him this year. Hopefully, if you were able to cut bait, you're able to scoop him back up, because I still think the potential's there. Obviously, the home run per fly ball has been it's been crazy high for him this year, 14.9%. Again, that probably comes from a little bit of fastball command, but not nearly that much. His home run rate is literally five times higher than it was last season, which is nuts. So that's going to regulate itself. Left on base percentage is also a little bit low compared to last year. Ground ball percentage, you still get that ground ball floor. Strikeouts should return. They have in the last couple starts. So I'm on Gesellman now. It was a rough beginning, but I still have faith. Too much talent there, I think, ultimately.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think he's been going to his changeup a little bit more as opposed to his curveball.
Yeah, he needs a third pitch to step up, so that's good.
And I think the change is pretty decent.
So, yeah, no, it seems like it. Yeah, everything I've seen, his lefty platoon splits aren't terrible. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, changeup is always the pitch to go to for lefty splits for me, for a righty pitcher. So it's a good sign for sure.
Mm-hmm. And the home run rate's coming down. I think, he might have gotten just a little bit BABIPed earlier in the season. That's coming back down to earth as well. I think these all kind of pretend good things for Robert Gesellman. Maybe he doesn't have the breakout you and I thought he would coming into the year, but I think he's going to be a solid number 4 or 5 starting pitcher rest of the way. And I think that has value, and you can go out and get him pretty cheaply. I mean, his ERA is 5.5 on the season, under 7 Ks per 9. And like I said, in the last 5 starts, he's been much better than that. And so I think right now kind of offers maybe your last chance to really go out and buy Robert Gesellman. And to your point, Stephen, I wrote this up and I wrote a write-up earlier on FanGraphs earlier this morning, and that is that Stephen Matz and Seth Lugo are on schedule to be back next weekend, and they're moving to a 6-man rotation. So thankfully he's going to be part of that, but there is going to be a little bit more competition once they start getting guys back.
You know how the Mets go, too. Best laid plans never happen with them.
So. 2 weeks from now, we could be talking about they needing to trade for a pitcher.
And also, one thing I need the listeners to do real quick is go on Mike Warner's Twitter account, Mike Warner FWFB, and tweet him about how much you love Seth Lugo.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah, because, he's Mike is a big fan, so...
All right, let's move on to someone who has not done well this year, and It's hard to see what the hell is going on. That's Rougned Odor has really, really struggled. I mean, he's had the pop, 8 home runs, stolen 5 bags, which is really, really nice so far in the season. But he's hitting .204, .249, .350 on the year. His ISO is, close to, a full point below where it was. So what are you doing right now with Rougned Odor?
I think you have to hold him, man, for what you paid for him at draft time. And I mean, it's a very difficult player to have right now with all the injuries you have and stuff. I mean, you're definitely being forced to play him. But I'm trying to pull up where he's at in my ESPN Player Rater, which is in an OBP league. So obviously, he's never going to be a star there.
He's going to have a real extra deficit there.
Yeah, definitely. And, I think that was a part. I mean, last year, yeah, he gets a lot of credit for being a 33 home runs, right? He's the youngest player, I believe, to hit – youngest second baseman ever to hit over 30 home runs. But even last year, with those good power numbers, came a .296 OBP. But in contrast, to go with that .296 OBP, he slugged .502. This year, he's slugging .350. And I think this might sound a little foolish, but I think – he gets a lot of hype for the punch hard around the world at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kind of I think that's actually kind of in his fantasy value. Isn't that weird to say? But I think it gives him more notoriety, and I think it gives him a bigger name in the fantasy industry. And to be honest, I mean, there's probably what 30% of us in the fantasy industry that are hardcore, and there's probably 70% that are just casual players.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair, yeah.
And I think he gets a little bit better propped up because of that. But I mean, OBP formats, I mean, you should have known to stay away. Hopefully you did. But I can't fault you for getting completely sucked in. I mean, he is still 23 years old. I mean, so you have to think the sky's the limit, and I think ultimately it still is. But a guy like him is always going to be prone to slumps because of the ultra-aggressive approach. 22% K rate doesn't seem like a lot, but again, when your walk rate's only 4.6%, which is actually higher than last year, it makes the strikeouts that big of more of a big deal. And the defense has slipped a little bit this year. It's just been a down year, and down year for the Rangers in general, and I'm sure that doesn't help. You know, feeding into it, you're already, 12 games out from the Astros or something crazy like that. I mean, it's an ugly year in Arlington, and I'm not blaming it all on Odor, but I think it's really hard in an environment like that when your whole entire team is struggling to get going. He's going to be prone to slumps, and I'm still in on him long term, but kind of have to chalk this up as a young player struggles.
Yeah, I think there are two numbers. Cause, I mean, if you look kind of at the underlying numbers on Odor, for the most part, everything is pretty much in line with where he has been in the past. But there are two numbers that jump out to me. One is his 229 BABIP, which is, you know, his career BABIP is 284. So we're talking about, you know, what, that's 55 points, you know, below where it's normally. And that could make up a huge portion of
sure
the,
can.
Yeah,
no,
average issues.
Definitely.
And I think part of that is because if you go and look at his infield fly ball percentage, it's at 25%.
Yeah, that's crazy high, astronomically high.
And so, I mean, that's going to come back down to earth. I think maybe a small tweak to, you know, kind of his launch angle, and I think he's right back to where he was. And we're talking about a guy who is probably, you know, maybe he doesn't hit 270 again like he did last year. He's probably more of a 260, 255 hitter. But I think, you know, that looks a lot better, especially, you know, than the 200 average he's got right now.
So, I'm with you, man. I think we're both still in.
Yeah, yeah. I would try to buy low, personally.
I mean, I don't know if I'm doing that this year.
You just let it be and then...
Yeah, I think in a dynasty league I'd try to buy, but I think in a redraft league I'd just kind of leave it alone.
I think in a redraft league, unless someone is really hurting because of injuries or other poor performance, I think a lot of people aren't going to want to sell a guy like Odor because he's still hitting for power, and ultimately what you bought him for was power. You know,
and those five steals, too.
Yeah, and I mean, but he's still showing power. He's still showing some stolen base prowess. So I mean, I think it might be a little bit more difficult unless there's a team that is desperate. Are you worried at all about the amount of times he's been caught because he's 5 for 9 on the base paths?
A little bit, but I think again that probably comes with being just a younger player. How many times was he caught last year? I don't have the number off the top of my head.
Give me one second.
Trying to look at it right now, and I lost the page.
He was 14 for 21. So he was
okay. So
66%.
He was 2/3 of the time last year, which is below the acceptable percentages.
But they're still letting him steal in spite of that.
Yeah, I mean, 5 for 9 is not great, but a lot of times, you know, the caught stealings don't really count against you unless you're in one of those weird format leagues. So you got to like that he's still willing to run. Maybe there's a nagging injury or two. I think it's fair to speculate. And again, maybe he got caught up into the launch angle revolution kind of, and maybe he went too high, like kind of like Trevor Story.
Yeah.
Maybe he changed his own personal launch angle a little bit too high, and now he's going to have to readjust. And obviously, the less steals come from being on base less. Obviously, you hit more fly balls, you're going to be on base less.
It's hard with a guy like this because typically, like, if I was a coach, and I'm not, but I would say, like, a guy like this, typically, you know, if a guy was struggling like this, especially with infield fly balls, I would advise him to be a little bit more patient. But he's just not one of those guys that
he's
patient.
You can't take away his game like that. Yeah. Yeah.
And so, I mean, you know, looking at his monthly splits, his infield fly ball percentage actually doubled or almost doubled from April to May. So it hasn't been getting better, but you almost want to see him, you know, he's obviously going to try to hit his way out of this. It's not going well to start the month of June because it's at 50% now in the month of June, which is even worse. But
If you guys have heard me a little bit on the podcast, like you guys know, I like the Statcast data. I'm just a little skeptical of it. I don't really know. I don't see a correlation to many parts of it. But one thing I do see a correlation to is exit velocity and health. Mm-hmm. And Odor, last year, 15% soft contact. This year, it's up to 23.5%. That's a sizable difference. That's more than just standard variance. 8% is a lot.
So you think there's maybe an injury that we don't know about?
Maybe. Maybe, because it would explain a lot of things. And the exit velocity with the soft contact is extremely higher than it was the previous year. And that is the one thing that I found with that exit velocity data is it does kind of correlate to injury. Hmm. So that's something to look forward to. That's kind of why I'm a little bit hedging my bets on him for this year. I'm still in on redraft because I think – or in Dynasty or Keeper because – I think ultimately he's going to pay off, especially with how young he is, and he's not going anywhere. You know, Texas is – the Profar thing isn't working out, and I remember when Odor was trade bait because they had Profar. You know how quickly things change. But obviously this – he's still a big part of their plans. He should be. So.
Yeah, I'm looking real quick at his pitching heat maps and see if maybe people are attacking him a little bit differently this year. No, I mean, they're really just going after him. Like it's
as they should, because we don't really have to throw this guy a strike. So
yeah, I mean they're I mean really his red spots are right down in the middle of the pike.
Trying to find his O swing, Z swing.
Yeah,
they're about the same as last year, but you know,
yeah,
way less results.
I think he's gonna be. I think he's gonna be fine. I think he'll turn it around. So I would try to buy this season. I'm not waiting until next year. Let's move on. Talk about Jeff Hoffman, who came back up.
I love Jeff Hoffman.
And he delivered another fantastic start. Was it last night? 7 innings, 9 strikeouts at San Diego. This makes, you know, three starts in a row in over the course of the last month that he's been called up for, where he's really shoved it right in the opponent's face. 2 on the road, 1 at home. What are your thoughts on Jeff Hoffman?
I love Hoffman, man, and I'm kind of curious to see what Colorado does with him. I think he's kind of proven to the point where you kind of have to put him in the rotation now, right?
Mm-hmm.
They can't keep, you know, sending him down or bringing him back up. In 20 innings pitched, 26-2 strikeout to walk ratio. That's really, really strong, and it's not as strong as his numbers in AAA this year. But he's in Albuquerque for AAA. That's a terrible environment to pitch in. Obviously, Coors is as well, but they've done a really nice job of him avoiding him with Coors so far. Whether that's on purpose or not, I don't know. The one thing I am, again, a little bit worried about is he's a heavy breaking ball pitcher. That's his best out pitch.
And it doesn't play well in Colorado.
Yes, and that was our kind of concern. We discussed the Jose Quintana trade rumors with the mm-hmm. Rockies White Sox. That was our concern. He's a heavy curveball pitcher in Coors Field. And I mean, it's going to have to work for somebody, and John Gray seems to be doing just fine. John Gray had a better numbers at home last year than he did on the road, which was one of the reasons why I was all in there. I'm not afraid to roster Colorado pitchers when there are premium talents like this. I think Jeff Hoffman is a guy that can pitch in any ballpark. I loved him at ECU. He was in conversation to be the number one pick in the draft until he blew his elbow out, and Toronto had the wherewithal to grab him at 13 overall, despite, you know, he just had Tommy John like a month before that. Or no, he had Tommy John after they drafted him, I'm sorry.
Ninth overall.
They took him ninth overall despite that. I mean, that's in this day and age where you need bang for your buck for a draft pick kind of quicker than normal, that's still high praise. I mean, and you got to remember that was at Anthopoulos there, at the helm there, when he's an aggressive mm-hmm. guy, and you know, he saw a talent and went out and got him, and you have to respect that. And Hoffman, man, he's been rated on my prospect list for a while, despite, you know, the ballpark. I would love him in Toronto, mm-hmm. but Toronto's a terrible place to pitch, and I would still love him there. But in Coors, I still like him a lot, and hopefully you can grab him because I think he's got to stay up. I mean, Tyler Anderson went on the DL with knee inflammation. Who knows if he comes back right away? But even if he doesn't.
It sounds like to me the Tyler Anderson putting on DL was a little bit of gamesmanship.
Sure, and Colorado's going to have a lot of that because I think 4/5 of the rotation is legit rookies.
Well, and they're going to get John Gray back here, in not too distant future.
Yep.
So the issue becomes with Hoffman is, where does he, you know, how does he break through the rotation? Because Senzatella's been decent. Marquez has been decent. Freeland's been decent. I don't think they're, you know, Chatwood doesn't have any options left. So, I mean, it's not like they can send him down. They're not going to send down Gray. Once Gray's back in the rotation, he's back.
Oh, no, he's a horse. Yeah.
So, I mean, it becomes, you know, do they move to a six-man rotation? And even if they do that, there's an odd man out once Tyler Anderson's back, and he should probably be back after the course of after, you know, the minimum 10 days, I would expect, from what I've seen. I love Hoffman. I think he's going to be bounced back and forth unless there's an injury or something done to open up a spot. And, you know, who knows, the Rockies may even try to trade for a starting pitcher.
They could.
You know, especially with the kind of the amount of talent they've got in that minor league system. They may decide that this is the year to go for it. They're leading the division, or at least right up there. I haven't looked at the standings in the last couple of days, but they're leading the division by a half game over the Dodgers coming into tonight. So, I mean, they may decide this is the year to go for it, and they may try and move maybe some of those minor league pieces for a stud starter, and if they do that, that further complicates Hoffman's, staying up. I think what they're doing is perfect, though, because what they're doing right now is bouncing in between the majors and the minors for road starts, because like we mentioned, that curveball plays better up when he's outside of Colorado, and so if they continue to do that, I think you just stash him in your NL onlys and your 15 team leagues, and you stream him in anything shallower.
I think you have to go get him in leagues now.
In a 12-team league, you would get him?
I think so. Because, I mean, you take a look at – I like Germán Marquez. I think he's a mainstay in the rotation now that he's back and up. But if you take a look at the peripherals for Senzatella and especially Kyle Freeland of late, they are beginning to point to trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Rockies know that, and these two kids are, like I said, they're 20. Senzatella's 22 and Freeland's 24. Freeland had arm injuries in the past. Senzatella had an arm injury last year too. I mean, these guys are, they're going to be on strict innings limits. They're not the type of pitcher they've showed. I mean, over the last 62 innings for Senzatella, he's got 38 strikeouts and 17 walks. That's not a very appealing fantasy asset, especially if he's going 5 and 6 innings at every start, which he pretty much is. He went 7 innings in his second, third, and fourth start, and then he's gone 6 and 5 in every start but one, which is consistent, but if you're in a quality start league, you know, those 5-inning starts don't help you much. And he did go one 8-inning game against St. Louis, who is a terrible offensive club at the moment. And then you look at Kyle Freeland, he's not even doing that. Freeland hasn't seen the 7th inning since the beginning of May. So that's something to look at there. I think those two guys are starting to hit the wall, and I think Colorado would be very proactive to get out in front of that, and they have Hoffman in reserve that they can kind of shuffle the deck around a little bit. And I still can't get behind the Rockies, man. I don't think they're going to be there at the end.
I think they are.
I don't think the pitching's going to hold up. They have to go get somebody. They absolutely have to go get somebody.
But that's the thing. They have the ability to do that.
They do, but they want to?
Like Arizona does not have the ability to go out and get someone because
they don't.
The Dodgers do, but what are the Dodgers going to go out and get? Really, I mean, they're not going to go out and get a pitcher. They're going to go out and get offense.
If they do get a pitcher, they'll get an innings eating number 5 guy because they have depth problems right now. But yeah, I'm with you. I think Colorado needs to do. Colorado is in a weird spot because, yeah, they're good. I think they're not as good as they are on paper. I mean, Mark Reynolds and isn't going to keep doing what he's doing. And the bullpen's going to wear down because they're getting to put a lot of innings on them now with the starting rotation doing what they're doing. And they are in a weird position because do you potentially shorten your window that hasn't really opened yet to go get somebody? Or do you kind of just let it ride and then kind of fall this year and then expect to be back next year? It's a really tough situation for them to be in. Obviously, you'll take it because you're competitive and you're good. But, I mean, you look at Tony Walters and Ryan Hannigan are your catching duo on offense because I haven't heard an update on Tom Murphy. David Dahl had a setback. Like, you look at things and I don't think the Rockies are here to stay for long term. I think they're there for this year. Excuse me. I think for the long term they are. But again, like I said, if they make a move for Quintana and blow up some of that depth, they might not be.
But so I mean, it's not like they've got to blow up a ton of depth. I mean, they can trade a guy like Ryan McMahon, who's doing well right now, just moved up to AAA.
Yeah.
You know, and not, you know, where's Rob Miltapia going to play? You know, I mean,
I think he's the guy that needs to trade, and unfortunately for him, a trade out of Coors Field would suck. But
sure, but I mean, you know, I mean, they could trade. Those,
play.
They could trade those two guys, you know, and you know, one of these three rookie pitchers, and go out and get a stud.
Yeah, I guess I'm with you, but I don't know. I don't buy the Rockies.
I understand, but I mean, I don't buy the Dodgers, and like I said, I don't think the Diamondbacks have enough in the system to go out and make a major move. And so that, I mean,
the Diamondbacks don't. Yeah, they don't.
The Dodgers do, but like, where are the Dodgers even going to upgrade? Second base? No, I mean, they got Forsythe, so they don't even need to upgrade second base anymore. Like, there's the Dodgers don't have like superstar talent really on their offensive roster, but they don't have like any real weak spots.
It's the Dodgers, the Dodgers' best upgrade for me is get a legit corner bat and move Bellinger to first base and get rid of Agon, but they won't do that.
They won't do that. That's the problem. You know, I mean, you know, and they're not going to upgrade third because Justin Turner's there. They're not going to upgrade, you know, they don't need to upgrade short or second. You know, and I mean, they could upgrade in the outfield, but then you're talking about either pushing, that means you're giving up on Jock Peterson or you're giving up on Yasiel Puig. Or you're taking away time from Bellinger, which they're not going to do, and they're definitely not going to upgrade behind the plate. Like, I don't understand, like the Dodgers, like, they're one of those teams where it's like, I don't think they're that impressive when you really look at the whole package.
I agree.
But I don't know where you really go to, you know, outside of maybe adding some bench depth, you know, maybe some better bench pieces. I don't, you know, I mean, are they really, you know, they got a million starting pitchers in Los Angeles. Are they really going to go out and trade for a starter?
I think if anything, they get an innings eater, like a Jason Hamill type for the back end. Just a guy that's going to be there every fifth day because they need that.
Maybe they go and trade for like a Brad Hand and really bolster that bullpen.
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, like you said, that's not a real earth shattering fantasy move. So I'm with
exactly.
you.
Exactly. So, I mean, for me, like I see why you don't buy the Rockies. I'm buying. I'm buying the Rockies. I think they're top to bottom the best team in that division.
Maybe I'm just an eternal pessimist because I've watched such shitty baseball all year.
Yeah, no, it's that's probably it.
Just no faith in anybody.
Let's move on and talk about the next guy on the list, and that is the aforementioned David Dahl. You mentioned he had a setback. What are you doing if you've been stashing David Dahl all year?
You got to cut him. I know it sucks because it's in redraft league. You probably should have been gone a while ago with all the injuries you probably have had, I'm guessing. But I'm sure you've had higher names, high profile names like a Gene Segura or something go down a couple times, and you're not going to cut a Mitch. I mean, who are you keeping, Mitch Haniger or David Dahl the rest of the year? I think you got to go Haniger, right? Guys like that are hurt.
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather have Haniger rest of the way.
Yeah, and guys like that you have hurt. You unfortunately with Dahl, you have to cut him. I'm not a doctor by any means, but do you think anything to do with his lack of quick recovery time is to do with the spleen that he doesn't have anymore?
I mean, I personally don't really know what a spleen does.
I guess it helps the healing process. It gets rid of bacteria or everything, and I don't know. But
I'm going to take your word on that.
Because I don't know if that has something to do with maybe how, you know, your human body recovers on things.
He's had injury issues before that. So,
absolutely.
I mean, like,
yeah.
I don't want anybody to think I'm calling David Dahl soft, but I do think that some people are just more predisposed to getting hurt, and there's nothing that, like, you know, for some people, you just can't avoid it. Like, there's just some people who are always nicked up, and always struggling, and always on the DL, and, you know, I hate to say that a guy like David Dahl, who's so young and got such great talent,
Oh, he's a stud, man.
You know, I mean, I think if he was given health, we're talking about a guy who could easily be a top 50 player in fantasy.
He's Andrew Benintendi in Coors Field.
Yeah, and I mean, I love the talent, but at some point, you can't wait around for the guy to be healthy.
No. Nobody remembers who rostered David Dahl on their team all year. No, everyone just remembers who won. And exactly. You know, it doesn't mean anything if you're holding the bag on a guy that doesn't play. And unfortunately, that's where we're at with this guy. But, I mean, look at what he did last year. And he came up out of the gate. He debuted at the end of July. Got a hit in his first 17 straight games. And 35 out of the first 37. Like, I mean, come on. And he's a center fielder in any other team. So add value there. He's going to be a high BABIP guy because he hits the ball hard. He's a really tough guy to evaluate. Obviously for this year he's nothing, but for redraft or for dynasty and keeper, I don't even know. Is he a guy, Justin? I know you're really aggressive on trades more than I am in dynasty and keeper leagues. Is he a guy you're going after in leagues like that, or are you just kind of leaving him alone?
You know, I mean, obviously it's team context. But if like for instance, I'm in a league where I am in a very long and involved rebuild process, and ultimately what I want is upside, and in that kind of league, I haven't gone to the David Dahl owner in that league yet, but I think I probably will tonight, and be like, hey, listen, you know, we only have 5 DL spots in that league. I'm sure hurting. I have only five. You know, well, I mean, like in a dynasty league, that's, you know, like you should have in dynasty leagues, you should have unlimited DL spots, in my opinion. I mean, the idea that you would have to, like, I had to cut Andrew Tolles last night to make room for another guy who went on the DL. You know?
Yeah, they should be doing that in dynasty. Yeah,
like,
I agree.
And as much as, like, okay, it's Andrew Tolles, like, you know, he should be back by the start of the season. And, you know, he was putting together a pretty decent year, and now he's out on the waiver wire for everybody to go, you know, snag if they've got room.
And if you're a bad team in that league, you're damn right going out there and grabbing him.
Why wouldn't you? Especially if you can just throw him into your DL, that's like a free slot right there, you know?
Yeah.
Actually, as we're talking, I'm looking up to see who has David Dahl in that league. But, I mean, I would. I'd go out, you know, because, I mean – you know, I mean, in terms of, ooh, a guy who's actually trying to compete has David Dahl. That is going to be interesting. I'm coming for you, Kevin. let's talk, like, prospect-wise, because virtually what we're talking about David Dahl is if he's done for, you know, most likely for the majority of 2017, if not all of 2017, we got to treat him like a prospect. So, I mean, like, you know, who would you rather have in terms of dynasty, David Dahl or Kyle Tucker?
Dahl. It's got to be Dahl.
So, I mean, and Kyle Tucker is like a consensus top 10 to 20 prospect.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
In fantasy circles. So, I mean, yeah, I would go out and get him. Would you rather have David Dahl or Acuña?
Oh, man. I still got to go Dahl because the ballpark he plays in.
And, I mean, proximity to the majors?
Yep, yeah. Well, Acuña's in double A, but Atlanta's going nowhere.
He's still 19.
Yeah. What about for you, real quick? This is easy for me. David Dahl or Austin Meadows? Because then their proximity is probably about the same, to be honest.
That's really – I'm going to go Dahl.
It's so am I.
Better ballpark.
So am I.
I have a better feeling that offense is going to still be really good next season. I have no idea what the Pirates are going to do.
They should have done, you know, their window's long shut.
Yeah, and I got a feeling that they're going to start selling off pieces. And
I don't think they will.
You don't think that if they can get a haul for Andrew McCutchen, they're going to do it?
I don't. I think they got a lot of backlash for shopping him around in the offseason, and I don't think they move him. But they don't have anybody else to move. I mean, what are you going to get for David Freese? What are you going to get for Francisco Cervelli? Like, not much. So they're in a bad spot.
I feel like they've got to. I think they've got to move McCutchen. I mean, he's only got 1 year left on his deal. It's a team option for next year. If they're not going to be competing next season, and like, don't get me wrong, part of it's some bad luck. I mean, losing Marte, you know, I mean, it's not bad luck for him. He did what he did. But as for a team construct, I mean, I don't think, you know,
Yeah, they could ill afford to lose him, and that's the one that they lost.
You know, losing Tyon to, I mean, cancer.
Yeah, and Polanco's just been struggling and
he's
hurt.
He's been struggling and hurt. And I mean, you know, like, you know, Adam Frazier's been a nice surprise. Harrison's been pretty good. Bell hasn't been as good as I think, you know.
But now with these last three guys, we're talking about a down a tier or two player. Like, you know what I mean? From your big studs that aren't performing. So,
yeah. So I mean, I think they got to trade McCutchen. I think they're not a team that tends to buckle to pressure, you know, from outside the organization in terms of, you know, fans. I mean, they
mm-hmm.
– so, I mean, I think they're going to try to move McCutchen at the deadline. All right, let's move on to Edinson Volquez, who pitched a no-hitter in pretty epic style. On what would have been the birthday of Yordano Ventura, good buddy of his and former teammate in Kansas City. You know, he's been actually halfway decent this year. Strikeout rate's gone up. ERA's 3.79. You know, he's limiting the home runs in his first season in Miami. What are your thoughts on Volquez?
Still walks too many guys. That's nothing new for him. But the strikeouts are making up for it now. He used to be like a 6.5 to 7 strikeout guy. Now he's up over 8. And when you're up over 8, the walks still need to come down a little bit. But to say if his walk rate gets down to his career, which is still high, but it's 4.2. If it even gets down to that, I mean, he's still playable because of the strikeouts. But the thing that comes with Volquez, it's really simple for me. Start him at home, bench him on the road. At home this year, 30 innings, 33 Ks, 18 walks, 2.4 ERA, 1.1 whip on the road, 31 innings, 24 Ks, 15 walks, 5.12 ERA, 1.64 on the road. I mean, that's pretty simple for me. I have Volquez in the Dynasty League, which I don't have the option to stream him because I need the innings. So I just hope and pray on the road. But at home, I'm pretty damn comfortable with him. And that's a compliment coming from me with someone as inconsistent as Volquez has been over his career. So it's nice to see that. But, yeah, I mean, he just needs – if he's one of those guys, if you watch him pitch and you catch him when he's on, like, you're like, this dude is one of the best pitchers in baseball. But, you know, when he's on – he looks great because everything moves so much, and the mechanics, the delivery is really, really, really fluid, and everything's moving, but it's in sync. And when he's going good, and it looks great, but when he's not, it's ugly.
Yeah, I'm, I saw kind of the end of that no hitter, and
I didn't see any of it. I was at a bachelor party that day, so I didn't do much of anything.
and I mean, it was impressive, for many reasons, and. Emotional to kind of watch because, I mean, this is, you know, it was a big moment for him and for what he was trying to represent that day. And for that, I'm...
Yeah, that's an awesome story.
It's amazing. And
can't get enough of stuff like that.
And that's one of the great things about baseball, you know, is I really feel like you get those stories that you don't necessarily get as much in other sports. You see it every once in a while in football or in basketball, but for the most part, that night, later that night, I rewatched the home run of D. Gordon hitting
yeah,
the
that's
home
great.
Run. You know, hitting the home run. You know, the day or the game after Jose Fernandez died, and you know, still brought a tear to my eye. And you know, it's amazing. But in terms of fantasy, I mean, if we take out the amazing start he put together, for the no hitter. He's got a 4.44 ERA. His strikeouts, you know, are still, you know, they're decent. They're better than they have been, but they're not great. He's still walking too many guys. You know, I mean, like, don't get me wrong. Like, it's better than it was last year, but we're still talking about a guy that, yeah, exactly. We're still talking about a guy that coming into last night before the stats that were added in that game, or sorry, a couple nights ago. He was walking 5/9. I mean,
yeah.
You know, an ERA over 4, you know, almost 4.5. His FIP and xFIP 4.6. I mean, like, this isn't a good pitcher. Like, this is a guy who had the night of his life. I'm so happy for him.
The Instagram picture he posted before the pitch, before the start, was great.
Yeah, I mean,
him and Edison, or him and Yordano.
I mean, yeah. He's on a crappy team that is going to be selling pieces. He's going to be one of them, so who knows where he ends up. It's probably not going to be in as nice of a ballpark that he's been in.
Maybe he goes to the Dodgers.
He's not going to the Dodgers.
He could be their back-end guy that they need. I don't know.
You know? No, I mean, this is not going to end well for Volquez. I'm glad he had his moment, but I'm not trying to capitalize on it.
No. Start him at home, bench him on the road.
I'm not even doing that.
No, his home numbers are great.
I don't care.
Fair enough.
Let's talk about Jay Bruce, who is putting together a Jay Brucean season. And I don't know why.
I was literally going to say that. Literally going to say he's pretty much the same player as he's been.
Yeah, I don't know why Mike wanted to talk about him. I mean, he's hitting .248, .323, .495, 13 home runs. This is pretty much what Jay Bruce does.
Yeah, maybe people are sleeping on him a little bit coming into the season, just how bad he was when he came over to the Mets last year. But he was good with Cincinnati, so those numbers got drugged down quite a bit. But yeah, he's an odd fit on that roster from a pure baseball standpoint. He can't play center field, and he can probably fake it at first base, but they like Duda, and there's not much difference between those two guys. I think Jay Bruce is a better ball player, obviously, but I mean, when Duda's hot, Duda has the ability to carry you, and Jay Bruce doesn't really strike me as a guy like that. Admittedly, I didn't really care for Jay Bruce when he was in Cincinnati, of all places, so I'm definitely not going to be higher on him when he goes to a worse ballpark. So I like the OBPs up at .323, back to his 2013 Reds levels, but other than that, meh.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he is who he is. You know, he's a guy that, you know, offers some pop. He's going to, you know, walk enough that he makes up for, you know, not a very good batting average. but, I mean, here's my question to you in terms of Jay Bruce, because I honestly don't know why Mike wanted to talk about him. And so I'm trying to figure out, you know, something interesting about Jay Bruce. The Mets are currently 8 games behind the Nationals. They are 24-31. They are probably not going to be a contender come the trade deadline. Jay Bruce is in the last year of his deal. Is there any interest if he gets moved to a different lineup?
I think there has to be a little bit, because he's more than likely probably going to end up in a better ballpark. But you have to think, I mean, 24 and 31, I'm kind of half kidding when I say this, that kind of puts them in the middle of the contention in that second wild card in the NL, because the National League is atrocious. And I think I'm opposite of you, and I think Arizona and Colorado both fall, so yeah, that kind of fits into that.
They still be 8 games behind.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks, you've got the Cubs, the Cardinals.
My issue with
Milwaukee,
the Mets is
of them.
The Mets were seemingly trying to move Jay Bruce all winter, and he's putting up another Jay Brucean season, as we both wanted to say, and I don't see how this moves his trade value. If anything, it's lower, because now you have him for only half a year.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, power is...
He's a free agent next year, and then you can't, you know, do... If you trade for him,
you're not going to give him the qualifying offer more than...
Which he might. He's a borderline qualifying offer guy, kind of. I mean,
Mark Trumbo hit Bruce, 50 bombs.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think it's, you know, Jay Bruce hit 33 last year, which I know is not 50, but Trumbo's not hitting 50 ever again, and I think everybody knew that. But I don't know. I'm trying to make a positive out of Jay Bruce, and he's just Jay Bruce, and it's...
Yeah,
he's as boring as a guy with two first names can possibly be.
Never trust a man with two first names.
So I've heard.
Let's talk about James Paxton. His comeback from the DL and shoved. He looked good in his last start. He's 4-0 on the season. He's striking out over 10 per 9. He has a 1.26 ERA. Where do you put James Paxton in terms of starting pitchers rest of the way?
I'm never really good at this sort of game. I would say he's a guy that you have to be prepared and have to have a backup plan at all times because of his extensive injury history. Mm-hmm. But if you can assume that he stays healthy which the rest of the way, which you can't, I think he's easily a top 40 guy.
Top 40 starting pitcher?
Yeah.
Oh, I think he's way higher than that.
And, well, I'm just, well.
I think we're talking about a guy who, I mean, depending on the depth of your league, because that really changes value in terms of injuries. Because, yeah. You know, in a 10-team league, there's a ton of options still out there. In a 15-team league, there's a lot less. In, you know, AL only, there's nothing. But, I mean, I would say if you could guarantee me he was pitching the rest of the way, I think James Paxton is a top 12 starter.
Oh, shit. I was going to ask you, my who would you rather is going to be James Paxton or Garrett Cole the rest of the way, but I don't even need to ask you anymore.
No, that's that. I mean, that with the injury history or with the injury risk, I'm taking Paxton.
Okay, that's fair. I probably do too, but.
You know, I mean, look.
Closer for me.
Look at the skills.
The skills have shown. It's just staying healthy is a skill too. And
it is. And it's not one he's been able to show in the past. And that's what I said. Like, if you could tell me he is healthy the rest of the way, I'm saying he's a top 12 guy. You know, he's a number one pitcher in a 12 team league. You know, because you can't, I think that drops him to around 20 to 25.
I think the regression monster is coming hard for him, though. Just off the top of your head, without looking, Justin, take a guess how many home runs James Paxton's given up this year.
Three.
In 43 innings.
Three.
Zero.
Oh, wow. I knew he had given up zero in May because I wrote about it last night or this morning for the Roto write-up. But I was like, well, maybe he gave up three in April.
Yeah, gave up zero. So that's obviously going to change. But, I mean, he's pitching. He's got a 1.26 ERA, but his FIP is 1.4. I mean, so the skills are still kind of there. The 271 BABIP, that seems awfully low. Seattle's defense with Segura and, I mean Segura being out.
The 271 BABIP is low, but, I mean, he's got a...
It's not unearthly low.
Yeah,
it's low.
He's got a under 300 BABIP for his career. I mean, this is a guy, I think he does a good job of, you know, limiting some of the hard contact. You know, the fact that he's a lefty and throws with so much gas is great. The control is much improved. From, you know, the beginning of 2016 to now. I think skills-wise, you have to buy it. Like you said, you know, he's not going to give up zero home runs the rest of the way. So, you know, he's going to get hurt there. But, I mean, it's not like you're projecting him to finish with a sub-2 ERA. We're talking about a guy that, you know, if he pitches to 2.5 to 2.75 rest of the way, that's a top 15 pitcher.
Okay, here's a question for you. In ESPN, in a quality start league, it's our dynasty league.
Okay.
Off the top of your head, where do you think Paxton is on the player radar?
Off the top
for just starting pitching.
I'm gonna say he is 14th.
23rd.
Okay.
He's right behind Alex Wood, and I think that's fitting.
would you rest the way? Would you take Alex Wood, or would you take?
I would take Paxton. Take Paxton.
All right. Would you rather have Michael Fulmer or Paxton?
Michael Fulmer. I like what I've seen a lot this year from him.
Luis Severino or Paxton?
Paxton. I think consistency is a skill as well, and Severino hasn't shown that.
Zach Greinke or Paxton? See, the fact you're even having to think about this is saying a lot to me.
Yeah, I go Greinke.
I do too, but it's close. And Greinke's been a top 5 pitcher this year.
Greinke's number 6 on this list. Yep.
He's number 5 on just the regular player rater. So, Paxton or Carlos Carrasco?
Paxton.
So, I mean, I think are Paxton or Lance McCullers?
McCullers, but I think I answered my own question on Paxton then. I mean, I'm higher than I even thought I was.
Yeah, I think you're putting him in the top 20 as well.
Yeah, I have to be. I mean, I'm going over. He's right behind McCullers and guys like that for me. I mean, Carlos Martinez or James Paxton?
I'm going to go Martinez because he's in the National League. And I think the Cardinals' offense is a little bit better than Seattle's, though it doesn't make any sense to why.
And last one, Robbie Ray or Paxton?
No, it's Paxton for me. I mean, and I love what Robbie Ray's been doing, but he's been doing it mostly on the road. And I mean, I think, you know, I know everybody's like, oh, just wait till the humidifier humidor gets there. And it's like, we have no idea what the effect of that's going to be. People need to stop projecting that just because Arizona is going to get a humidor, that's actually going to change a ton of stuff. We have no idea how that's going to affect things. You know, hopefully for their pitching staff, it makes things better. But I mean, really, do you want it to make things better from a fantasy standpoint? Because that means less in value for guys like Peralta and Pollock and Goldschmidt and Owings and Drury. I mean, I don't want to see it. You know, their pitching staff seems to be doing just fine
just
without it.
Leave it how it is. Yeah, they already get to pitch in San Francisco and LA and San Diego
and you know, Ray and Greinke and Godley and Walker when he was healthy were doing just fine without it. So. Like to me, it's like why would they want to mess with what they've got going on right now? But
I'm with you.
You know, let's talk about Matt Kemp, who is putting up another good year. Are you buying or selling on Matt Kemp right now?
Beginning of the season, I wanted nothing to do with Matt Kemp, and I still don't think I do. But he's making me change my opinion of him a little bit. Known fact, it's probably well known. I hate guys that don't walk. Hate it, hate it, hate it. And he is the epitome of that. He's a one-trick pony, so to speak, as far as what he offers you on offense, home runs. There's no home runs, he's not hitting. But this year, he's hitting .335. So what do we know about anything? I think, and obviously, I think he does get labeled with that injury tag, which is, he shouldn't at this point. Last three full seasons are 156, 154, and 150 on games played. So I think that conversation is over. I do think he's playing well over his head right now, and I would say sell, but in a world where you probably have four or five hurt guys on your team, a guy that's going to play that much and that often and bat in the middle of a lineup, yeah, Freddie Freeman's not there, so it's going to hurt the lineup, but he's still going to play every day, and he's still going to produce what he can. He's got 10 home runs in 44 games. Is pretty good production out of a guy like this. So I would say hold. I'm not buying, but I'm certainly not selling as high as I'm certainly not trying to sell as I normally would be, because I think just somebody that plays so much and so consistently every day is worth gold.
I just don't think anybody is going to buy him for a price that's worth selling him. Because, I mean, I try to sell him right now too. But, I mean, like, who's buying Matt Kemp right now? No one's buying Matt Kemp. No one's buying the .330 average. He's got, you know, career.
No, he's definitely not.
He's a career .288 hitter. He hasn't hit .280 or hasn't even hit above .270 since 2014. You know, the BABIP is, .384. He's a career .342 BABIP guy. I mean, things are going to come back down to earth. And I don't think anybody wants to be holding the bag. I know you say that he's no longer the injury risk that he once was. He's one of those guys that when he does fall apart, it's going to happen.
It's going to be bad. I'm with you.
He's got arthritic hips. I suffer from that same issue. And mad props to the dude, because like the idea that he could be playing professional baseball and play 150 games in three consecutive seasons with arthritic hips and bone spurs in his hips. Sometimes I can barely walk to my, fucking car. Like, I mean, it's having hip issues is no joke. And so I wouldn't want to be holding the bag. If you can get, equal value for what he's putting up right now.
Well, you do it in a second. You're not going to get that.
No one's going to give you that. So, I mean, I think you just got to ride it out and hope that this isn't the year that, that you get caught holding the bag. I'll be interested to see if the Braves try to move Matt Kemp. He's got 2 years left on his contract after this year. He's 32 going on 33. He's going to be 33 at the end of the season. He's owed $21.5 million the next two seasons, each season. I wonder if the Braves try to get out from under that deal, and it's not like it's that expensive, so it's not like whatever team takes him on is, having to pay, a huge above market value, but I don't think they want to be holding the bag, you know, those two seasons. And they've got a lot of talent coming up for the minor leagues. I wonder if he ends up in a different location. If he did, would that change his value to? Like, let's say he ended up back with the Dodgers.
I just don't think a National League team can trade for him.
You think he's got to go American League?
I think he has to be a DH. He's one of the worst defensive outfielders in the game right now, which is weird to say.
Well,
just because, you know,
here's the only issue with that. Where does he DH?
Another thing. Who wants a DH?
Like, exactly. No team, right? Like, I'm looking just briefly, you know, I mean, no team that's in the playoff race right now in the American League really needs a DH.
Spitballing. Texas? They're never going to pay the price, but Minnesota Twins could use a bat, but they're not going to pay for
they're
that.
They're not going to pay $20 million
for that.
Plus the prospects.
Boston?
They've got Hanley that they've got. They play at DH.
Yeah, and Mitch Moreland at first, so I don't know if Hanley can play first.
Yeah, and they got plenty of stuff in the outfield in Boston. I think Texas is the answer.
But they're out of it, man.
How far out of it are they?
They're also going to be. They're also going to be competitive next year, though. So I mean, they could do it as a move like that. But I feel like.
I mean, I can't imagine Tampa. You know, Detroit's not going to do it.
Oh, Detroit's
with what they've got. Yeah, no, they're not going to. I mean, Cleveland?
It's possible. Injuries always happen, too, but Cleveland could use a stick.
You know?
But I think they're tapped out with the Encarnacion contract. I think they kind of stretch their limits there. The logical fit, well, the Angels? They're kind of borderline.
Where are you playing?
They're up on the luxury tax, and they don't want to add another player,
no,
which is why they're
that's not
the
gonna
situation
happen.
That they're in now. So,
and even I mean, even Cleveland couldn't do it because they've got E5 and Carlos Santana, so they're not going to put him at DH there. Yep. You know, I mean, I guess they could try putting him out in the outfield, but do you really want to do that? And like you said, are they going to? I just don't know where he. I mean, I know Seattle's been bad, but where are they looking? You know, they've got Nelson Cruz. They're not doing it. So,
I guess if you want to stick to the National League team, I could see maybe they'll never do this, but Cardinals, they need a corner outfielder. But again, you can't play him in the outfield. So, who knows what?
Well, I mean, he's played only in National League teams.
So, yeah, I know, but I mean, he's statistically the worst defensive outfielder in the game right now.
Yeah,
whether you trust those numbers or not, but I mean. He's been bad for years straight, so even if you don't trust him for this year, I mean, you know, he's consistently been awful since he's now newly motivated in Atlanta.
I mean, so. I know teams don't necessarily really like to trade in division, but with Jason Worth's injury, left field in Washington?
Yeah, I think if Nationals committed that much money to somebody for the next couple of years, though, I don't think they would do that.
And they're up against luxury tax as well, I believe, so.
Yeah, I think so. So I don't think he goes anywhere.
And I think their top priority is probably a closer.
Yeah, and also I think their second priority is if Bryce Harper wants a guy, they're going to go get that guy because they want Bryce Harper. So
agreed. All right, let's move on to Tanaka, who is.
I was dreading talking about this guy because I just put my hands up, man. I don't know.
All right. Well, I mean, I guess I can start. I think he's injured.
I think that's the obvious call.
This to me just reeks of the UCL injury that he's been pitching through for a number of seasons finally coming back to roost. Which, I mean, it's so hard, you know, the velocity's up, you know, but it hasn't
gone well.
Pitch
mix is the same?
Yeah.
Pitch mix is the same?
I mean, here's the big thing. Negative value on the fastball in spite of the velocity being up. And that to me says, one, that maybe the movement isn't the same with the velocity increase, and maybe he needs to dial it back down a little. Maybe he's trying to, you know, throw harder to make up for a little bit of the struggles, and that's just not working. He needs to dial it back down. Or maybe that there's something hurt and he's trying to hide the fact that he's
hurt. You might be right. I do take it back. The pitch mix is not the same. He's actually throwing that splitter, his best pitch. He's throwing it 10% of the time less, and I know that's a high-stress pitch.
Yeah, I think there's something going on.
Might be onto something there. Yeah, I mean, I just don't know what you can do with him, though. I think you kind of stuck with him at this point. The numbers have been atrocious, so.
I don't think you have to be stuck with him. I think he's droppable.
You just cut him? Okay, yeah.
I mean, that's easier said than done because depending on what your situation's like is on your team, you could be looking at it. You could be looking at your team and going, dude, I'm rostering like four other injured guys, like, and there's nobody out on the waiver wire. Like, I can't just drop this dude. But I mean, I think in a 10-team league, he needs to be cut. I think he is cuttable in a 12-team league. Obviously, in 15-team or deeper, you're having to continue to roster him. But rest of the way, would you rather have Tanaka or Ariel Miranda?
Probably Miranda, as weird as that sounds.
I mean, Miranda's been great. He's available.
Depends what you need, though.
He's available in almost 70% of ESPN leagues.
I guess here's the thing. Say I'm a middle of the pack team in a 12-team league, and someone cuts Tanaka, I'm picking him up. Just because I think he's going to have more upside than anybody on the market.
But are you picking him up in a league in which you need the innings? Like, no, you're going to pick him up knowing you have to put him into your lineup. Like, you can't just stash him.
Yeah, then...
You're not picking him up, right? I mean,
no,
he's gonna ruin, he could ruin your ratios. And it's not like... I mean, we're not talking about, a guy who is necessarily a stud strikeout guy. I mean, ultimately, the issue is home runs. I mean, he's given up two home runs per nine, which was twice of what we saw last year. But even if you take that away and you regress him back down to, like, you know, 1.25, you're still looking at a guy with probably, a 4 ERA or worse. Like, he's not right. We're like a third of the way into the season. You can't just keep rostering these guys based on name value. I understand if you can't make the move because there's nobody else available, on your team. You know, I'm going to just go to the waiver wire in a 12-team league that I'm in and see what's available. And I'll do some would-you-rathers real quick with you.
Yeah, real quick. Yeah, because, I mean, I think he's going to have more upside than probably most of the guys available.
All right. Would you rather – holy crap, I don't know why he's available. Danny Duffy's on the DL.
Oh, Danny Duffy.
All right. Jay Happ.
Probably Jay Happ. Well, definitely Jay Happ, not probably.
Chase Anderson.
I might go Tanaka there because I think Anderson is just as likely to blow up.
Jeff Hoffman.
Oh, Jeff Hoffman.
Jared Eichhoff.
Eichhoff's been brutal, but I'll go Eichhoff.
Edinson Volquez.
Probably Volquez.
Let's see. His teammate, CC Sabathia.
I need to check out what CC's doing. He's kind of irrelevant. I haven't heard anything about him all year. He's about the same.
Last 15 days, he's won. He's 3-0, a 2.04 ERA, striking out 22 in 17 and two-thirds innings.
That's encouraging. And I looked at his season numbers, and they're about what I expected him to be. I'd go CC.
Tanaka or Ty Block?
Tanaka, because Ty Block can't strike me out.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm going to take Tanaka over Volquez, Sabathia, Block out of that group.
So how funny is this? You're actually higher on him than I am, and we just talked about him a little differently.
Yeah. Oh. But, yeah, I mean, to me, Sabathia is smoke and mirrors, bad park. I'd rather have a little bit more upside with Tanaka. Like I said, I don't buy in Volquez, and like you said, Ty Block doesn't strike anybody out. I'm a Giants fan, I should know this off the top of my head. I think he's had a little bit more. No, he hasn't had any more strikeouts, really.
No, he hasn't. He's been. I looked at him in one league I was in because I needed just innings, and he has a level of his floor, but his floor is not quite high enough for me.
it's like safe, but it's not like
yeah
safe. Like, he's not going to kill you in the ratios, which is great, But, yeah, I mean, yeah, he strikes nobody out. I mean,
his last start against the Phillies, 9 innings, 7 hits, four Ks.
Yeah. But still, I mean, that's still 4 strikeouts over 9 innings.
Yeah. Quality starts in his last 5?
Yeah. He's looked good. I mean,
yeah. Then he goes and throws 7 innings with 3 hits and 2 walks and 1 strikeout. Like, you can't do that. You can't roster that.
I mean, he's a better real life pitcher than he is a fantasy.
100%. There's zero upside in fantasy.
So, all right. Let's move on and talk about. Let's talk about Aaron Hicks, who, you know, I mean, last I saw, Jacoby Ellsbury had been shut down. He was not resuming baseball activities. He's on the 7-day DL with a concussion. And we all know concussions can be tricky and hard to predict when people are going to come back from. And in his stead, Aaron Hicks has been very, very good. Now, Aaron Hicks, for those who are newer to baseball or fantasy baseball, Aaron Hicks was supposed to be what people thought Byron Buxton was going to be for the Twins. Aaron Hicks was like one of the top prospects in all of baseball, was going, you know, everybody thought was like the next, you know, can't miss stud. This year,
yep. 14th overall pick in 2008.
Mm-hmm. This year, in 170 plate appearances, he's walking 16.5% of the time. His triple slash is 321, 432, 577, 8 home runs, 7 stolen bases. Are you buying Aaron Hicks?
I am. I'm buying him because he's. I haven't watched him physically play as much as I want to, but I think he seems like a guy to me that's utilizing his skills and kind of taking advantage of this launch angle era, I'm going to call it. I think he's buying into it. He's hitting the ball in the air a lot, and it's working for him. He's hitting more ground balls than fly balls, but the numbers are catching up to each other. The thing with Aaron Hicks, though, that I like is that he's a combo meal every night. Mm-hmm. He's a threat. 8 homers, 7 steals. He's displaying the skills. He's an elite defensive player. So that's going to keep him in the lineup as it should. Ridiculous arm. He can play everywhere. He's kind of been known as a lefty killer before this. Like, he was a good DFS guy against lefties. But now you have to play him all day. 27 years old, that's the magical age, right? To enter your peak. So he's there. He's at that number, and he's got the prospect pedigree like you mentioned. Some guys are late bloomers, and development's not linear, as we know. And I think he's basically turned into a slightly watered down version of Carlos Gomez and that he was in the Brewers, right? I mean, he's basically that type of player with less strikeouts, which is always fantastic.
Well, and better batting average floor, because I mean, the thing with Carlos Gomez always was. Like, you didn't know where he was going to hit batting average wise.
Yeah,
like
that's fair.
Like 240 to 280. And, you know, if you got the 280 year, you were looking at a first round talent. You got the 240 year, you could be looking at a guy who's, you know, you overpaid for. And then, of course, the floor came completely out.
Yeah, I think that's a good comp for what to expect maybe from Hicks if he can keep this up. I mean, I think that he's a similar skill set all around, similar body type, everything. Probably not as big as a douchebag, but that's nothing we can quantify. So I'm going to go with that. And, he has to play every day, right? There's no way you can sit this dude. Say Ellsbury comes back, you know, in another week or two. You can't sit him for Aaron Hicks, right? Or you can't sit Aaron Hicks to play Ellsbury.
I mean, there's one big skill change so far this year.
Walk rate.
Well, it's O swing percentage. He's swinging outside of the zone 7.5% less than he was last year.
That's physical science. Yeah,
that is him making a conscious decision to have better plate discipline, not be a hacker up there. You're seeing the walk rate exemplify that. You know, he's doubled his walk rate from last year, pretty much.
16.5% now. He was 8.3 last year.
You know, he's making good contact. He's hitting the ball, you know, fairly hard. And the one thing he's not doing is hitting it soft. I mean, you know, he's either medium or hard contact. You know, he's putting the ball, you know, pretty much everything else is right in line, you know, with where he's been in the past. He's just hitting better pitches, you know, and swinging at better pitches, which, you know, seems like a small adjustment to make. But that's a lot easier said than done when you're facing 100-mile-an-hour heat, you know, and, you know, 80-to-90-mile-an-hour break and stuff. And so I really like what I've seen from him so far. I think his defense is good enough to keep him on the field. I think the Yankees have him. The Yankees have him under team control for another 2 years.
I'm sure they do.
You know, after this, and so he's. You know, I mean, he's part of. I think the immediate future. I think there's a really good chance that this could stick for a little while. There's no reason for them to put Ellsbury back in the lineup once Ellsbury is healthy, and who knows. You know, and they're going to try to get rid of Brett Gardner, who's having a fantastic season. So I wouldn't worry necessarily about Aaron Hicks' long-term playing time for the rest of this season because I think the Yankees are going to make sure he gets in the lineup.
He has to. Yeah, and like I said, I mean, his percentage, I'm in one Yahoo League, unfortunately. I prefer not to play on that platform. But I'm in one league, and his ownership percentage is only 71%. I'm trying to figure out how.
Because people don't believe it.
You should, because
And this is the time of year where people start to tune out. Like if you're not like a guy like if you know, I mean, it's not people listening to this podcast because
sure.
I mean, if you're listening to a fantasy baseball podcast, especially not one of the big name ones, somewhere in June. You're obviously committed for the long haul.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the time, you know, fantasy football starting to kind of heat back up. You know, people are starting to think about that. You know, if you're in 9th or 10th place in your 12-team league, you may start going, you know, it's a redraft league. Maybe I'll just play more DFS or start prepping for football. You're going to start seeing guys like this where, you know, they don't have the name value from the beginning of the season, but you're like, you know, Justin Bohr. I was talking about this with Lauren Michaels.
A good name there.
You know, I was talking about this with Lauren Michaels on my radio show the other day. He's like 60% owned in ESPN, or at least he was last week. Like, I mean, dude led the majors during the month of May in home runs in ISO, and he was 60% owned coming into mid last week in ESPN leagues. I mean, this is the time of year you could start taking advantage of those people who are lazy, or giving up in their fantasy leagues. And this is why I tell people, don't give up, you know, in roto leagues. Like, you know, I know, like, if you're buried in the standings in a head-to-head, it's really hard to overcome at this point. But in roto, it is a lot easier to move up your standings than you think it is. And if you start giving up, you know, if you're in 8th or 9th place and you go, well, I'm going to start focusing on my other teams, you can leave money on the table. And I know this because I've done it before, you know, especially with the amount of leagues I'm in. You know, sometimes you start going, okay, this is the one I'm not going to pay as close of attention to because these 8 are ones I need to. But you can really make up ground at this time of year because other people will start doing that. And not paying attention to how close, you know, things can actually become.
Well said. I think everything you said is spot on. Roto leagues, before you know it, you can move up a couple spots a day, mm-hmm. to be honest with you. I mean,
I did it last year in an NL only. In mid-July in an NL only league I was in last year, I was in 9th out of 12 places.
And, oh, wow.
And I looked at the standings and I went, you know what? I think I can gain enough points to maybe give me a shot at the money. And I finished in 2nd place.
Hey, got that money.
You know, and it wasn't necessarily about, you know, any big moves or big pickups, you know, or guys coming over to the National League at the trade deadline. It was really about due diligence, you know, and making sure I had set lineups and that I was picking up guys as they appeared on the waiver wire and things like that. And other people stopped paying attention and let their team go to shambles. And I was able to just pick up point after point after point. And all of a sudden I'm looking at a 2nd place finish, you know?
Awesome. Yeah.
You know, and don't give up, especially in those roto leagues, you know, like I said, head to head, if you're buried in the standings, it can be hard to overcome. And I wouldn't give up in those either, but,
it's too early for that anyways.
Yeah. In roto leagues, you know, I mean, people lose patience. It's a marathon, not a sprint. You got to remember that. There's still 2/3 of the season left. If you know, you can easily turn things around. All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap us up for this episode. We're already over an hour and 10 minutes, so I'll just throw those other two names we're going to talk about onto the Wednesday show.
There you go. I'm interested in your second guy, not to tease it, but I'm interested to see what the guys say about second guy on this list that we didn't cover.
Okay. Well, I'll talk about it with Chuck and Darius on Wednesday.
Yeah.
That's going to wrap us up. So, Matt, why don't you tell people where you can reach, what you're working on?
Sure. MDTompFWFB on Twitter. Getting ready for the draft, man. I'm probably one of the few people that liked it, that paid hardcore attention to the Major League draft. So I'm excited for it. Obviously.
All right. Give me one name that no one else is talking about.
I think an underrated name that no one's talking about. I'll go with Jake Berger, third baseman from Missouri State. Kid can mash. I think he can hit. So I think that's a guy who'll be up relatively soon. If you want a guy that – my favorite guy is Adam Haseley from Virginia. I think that's my guy, and I think he's going to end up in Arizona, which is a hell of a place to be an outfielder. So I'll take that.
Nice. All right, you can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can read all my stuff on FanGraphs, where I write 5 days a week, or five times a week. You can read stuff on friendsoffantasybenefits.com, where I write periodically. You can hear me on the radio on Thursday nights, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network with Laura Michaels for the Tout Wars Hour. And I got some other cool stuff kind of in the works, little by little, definitely keep kind of tuned to see all the new stuff that I might be coming out with. We'll see what develops.
Teaser there, huh?
Yeah. Well, I'm working on some interesting kind of different things that may not materialize at all. That may not materialize till next season. I'm definitely working on stuff. I'm hustling.
Got to make that money, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Or not.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Definitely give us a review. It really, really helps us out. If it's of the 5-star variety, we will make sure that you get entered in to win some of the free Friends of Fantasy Benefits gear. And you know what? Let's give away a free T-shirt right now. Let's do it. I'm gonna go and just look and pick a review. Give me a second. Let's see. I am gonna go. Let's go with this one. Let's go with an old school review. So this one is entitled "Crass with Class." It was given in May of 2016 from someone named Frankie O. It says, it is very NSFW, but these guys know their stuff and are really entertaining. A must add for any podcast listener. So Frankie O, if you're still listening to us, reach out to me via email, on Twitter, wherever, Facebook group. If you're not in our Facebook group, definitely go check that out. And I'll make sure you get a free Friends of Fantasy Benefits T-shirt. And
that'll mean Frankie O will have more T-shirts than I do.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I've got a number of more of these to give away. I've also got some rec room gear to give away, and we'll be doing that kind of stuff all season long. So, congratulations, Frankie O. Keep those 5-star reviews coming. And if you don't have iTunes, steal someone's phone. Like, you know, you've got a friend with an iPhone somewhere. Steal his phone. Give a 5-star.
Just make sure you give it back.
Definitely give it back. But you know. put your name on a review. You don't have to screenshot or send it to us. We'll just pick it straight off of the iTunes list. And people get free shirts. Mike has some free mugs to give away. So definitely check that out. So that's going to wrap us up for this episode. For Matt and myself, thank you for listening. A fantastic baseball season.